You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Jonathan Franzen, the author of four novels and two works of nonfiction, won the 2001 National Book Award for his third novel, The Corrections. He's also one of the writers many critics and readers have credited with reinvigorating the American novel. His latest highly acclaimed book, Freedom, is being reprinted in paperback by Picador Press. It comes out today, and I'm very pleased that it brings Mr. Franzen, who says he hates giving interviews, to our show. Welcome back.
Did I say I hate giving interviews to your show? What did I say?
No, no, you didn't say, you said you hate giving interviews, not to our show. I'm welcoming you back to our show. I'm sorry, that's just the way the English language works sometimes. Earlier this year, you expressed on the pages of The New Yorker how frustrating the business side of writing could be. You wrote, "By the end of last fall, I was in some need of being farther away. I'd been promoting a novel nonstop for 4 months, advancing through my schedule without volition, feeling more and more like the graphical lozenge on a media player's progress bar. Substantial swaths of my personal history were going dead from within, from my talking about them too much." Do you still feel like a graphical lozenge? You've been on another book tour, haven't you?
I know. I just got back from Europe. Breaks help. And I had a break doing that piece that took me to Chile and the islands offshore. Last fall, it was pretty much 3 months nonstop. And you do, yeah, that's exactly how you feel. It's you become the calendar in a sense. It's,
and the breaks are generally birding. You said you were in Australia for 3 weeks and you did a lot of interviews and then you did some birding.
I did a bunch of public appearances in Australia, but having gone that far, I thought it would be silly not to spend 2 weeks doing some bird watching. And it's an amazing place. It's just totally different flora and fauna. You really do feel far away there.
When did you become so interested in bird watching?
It crept up on me starting about 10 years ago.
Because you moved to a place in California where...
That was part of it, yeah. Part of it, getting involved with a woman who came from an animal-loving family with a sister who and a brother-in-law who were big bird watchers. I think it might have had to do with, in some way, with my mom's death. It probably had to do with reaching the point in my life where I could see I wasn't going to have children. But mostly it had to do with, for the first time in my life, taking a little time to experience joy now and then. I'd been so focused, basically, from college graduation in 1981 to the publication of The Corrections. That's exactly 20 years. I'd been so focused on showing what I could do as a novelist. And then suddenly I, you know, got some attention and felt like I can take a little time to do something for me.
But I guess the question is, why birding? Why not surfing or collecting stamps or one of a million other things that you could have done?
I don't know. I just fell in love with birds, and especially the little birds, the victim birds. And it ties in a little bit with the sense I have as an exponent for a form that is no longer dominant the way it once was, that is, as a novelist. I have the sense that I have this deep sense of community and with an affection for the world of readers and writers who are persisting in this thing that has now become somewhat marginalized. And there is something about the way that, in which birds are increasingly marginalized by modernity that makes them attractive to me.
Aren't as people still reading novels in huge numbers? They've just switched over to Kindles or to other sources.
Well, that's, in fact, an argument I made in that piece you started by quoting from, that when you compare the real alternative to the novel, which I would submit is the internet and the world of the social media, you start seeing TV and movies as really brethren of the novel. And to that extent, yes, the idea of getting engaged in a sustained narrative that you know to be made up, identifying with characters who feel like you, but also you know they're made up.
But they also, to some degree, remind you of other people you know.
That's right. That's right. They are species of humanity. In that sense, the novel is alive and well. And obviously, even though as a percentage of the gross population, serious novel readers may not be that numerous, in raw numbers, we still are.
Well, there the alternatives are television shows and other, and I guess movies less so now than in the past?
Yeah, movies seem to be getting split off and subsumed under video games, whereas TV is taking on more and more of both what movies had done and really moving into the novel's 19th century turf as well. And for a long time, I felt threatened by that. And now, given the more radical threat of this kind of world of constant stimulation with no sustained narrative that the social media and the internet represent, I really feel this kinship and solidarity with good TV.
The earlier books you've described as being kind of Pynchon-esque. This book is more like is in the realm of realism, isn't it?
You know, I was always a realist, I was taken with all those those great postmodern writers who were in fashion when I was coming up as a writer, and Pynchon was certainly somebody who you had to contend with.
Talk about people who don't do book tours.
I know one kind of envies that from time to time. You see, you I understand much better why a person makes that decision now. But, of course, he was reacting to a time when writers really were public figures still. And no longer is that a default position for the writer, so you're not actually making any statement by not touring. You're simply contributing to the general invisibility of the novel. So it's a little bit different situation. But at any rate, I think I was attracted to the content of writers like Pynchon, Gaddis, Coover, that crew. My method was always more frankly realist, I think, than theirs.
The Corrections is about the takes place during the late 1990s economic boom. It came out right before September 11th. Freedom is a novel about the Bush years. It came out near the beginning of a very serious recession. How much do you want your novels to reflect the times in which you've been writing them? Do you ever see a headline and know you're going to have to include something you hadn't planned on writing about?
Well, I really specifically don't want to be a headline chaser. I want to be if anything, I'd rather be a headline anticipator. I like to say that the great 9/11 novel was written by Don DeLillo in the late 80s. Actually, he wrote several books that were very much taken up with terrorism, including Libra and the names. It was DeLillo who once said to me, "You know, the writer leads; the writer doesn't follow." So actually, you know, representing the time we live in, trying to contend with the news cycle, I think that's kind of a losing game for the novelist.
But you still try to deal with the big issues of the day.
Yeah, I'm interested in the issues of the day because I live them in a day-to-day way, and to me the novel is about struggling to make sense of life as I'm living it, and much of the input in my life is cultural and political. So yeah, I can't ignore it.
Well, you wrote in The Guardian, "Fiction that isn't an author's personal adventure into the frightening or the unknown isn't worth writing for anything but money."
I did write that, I confess.
Well, I'm sure you still believe it.
Well, that's to say that, you know, I don't look at the world and assemble a list of, well, here are the interesting subjects, and let me see if I can fashion a narrative that represents this list of interesting subjects. It's much more about, I'm very preoccupied with character. The social stuff comes in only as it pertains to the characters.
A lot of artists will tell you that the next piece is a reaction to the previous piece, that everything is a kind of a dialogue in their work. Does that work in writing novels as well? Is Freedom a continuation of the Corrections or a reaction to it?
That's a really good question. I think inevitably, yes, it has to be a reaction. Otherwise, there doesn't seem to be room for another novel. I would go further and say, for me at least, because it takes me so long to write a book, I really try to put everything I've got into a book. I try to make it equal as well as I can to the dramatic situation of my life at any given period. And after I was done with the corrections, you know, the first attempts I made to get a new book going, they just seemed like feeble imitations. And I really need to allow some time to elapse so that I can become a different person. And being a different person, in this case, a less angry person, somebody less inclined to satire, someone less sure of himself morally, that necessarily engenders a different kind of book.
My guest is Jonathan Franzen, whose last book, Freedom, I don't know how much we want to get into this, was called The Great American Novel by Time Magazine, something that I'm sure you're going to have to explain for the rest of your life. It's just been released in paperback by Picador. Is that something that has caused trouble for you? I mean, there was a phrase actually coined, Franzenfreud.
Right, yes. That thankfully, I didn't interact with that directly. I heard about it indirectly. Joy of Franzen, Franzenfreude, as the Germans would say. That's not what they meant, I know.
No, they were talking about when a book comes out and is praised that highly, there's always a reaction to it, a negative reaction.
It's a nice problem to have,
yeah,
right?
I would imagine that there's more of an upside than a downside.
Yeah. As problems go, I'd rather be trying to explain away that cover of Time magazine than say, you know, Oprah Winfrey's disinvitation of me. That's why I'm really
happy.
Well,
how about living in total obscurity?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. There are a lot of things that are not so pleasant to try to explain.
You tell Freedom in several third person narrators. All of them very distinct characters. Patty Bergman's voice seems to resonate throughout all the selections. So is the story of Freedom ultimately hers?
I don't know. She is the one who gets to present her autobiography in her own voice.
Although in third person.
Although in third person. She's an athlete, you know. She's and all she really has as she goes through life making mistakes. I'm not saying this is me, but there is a certain similarity there. All she has is an ability to laugh at herself. And I think she found, or I with her found, that the litany of mistakes she had made was funnier when she talked about herself in third person.
Did you ever try writing it in first person?
I did. I tried turning those pages around, and they didn't seem as funny. And I'm always to me, whether a page is funny or not is very nearly equivalent to whether it seems good to me or not. If I'm not laughing, then I know there's trouble in a book. And
does the funny just come out naturally, or do you think, oh, gee, I haven't had funny for at least three paragraphs, I better say something funny?
The funniness, to me, I mean, and it's an author is in a bad position talking about how funny their work is, because you know, a reader doesn't find it funny, then you really look like a jerk talking like this. But to me, it's something that resides in the tone. And it may not even be laugh out loud funny, but when I pick up, name a great writer, Dennis Johnson or Flannery O'Connor, there is something embedded in the very DNA of the language that has in it humor, even if it's not direct humor. There's a distance and a control and a sense of you're in good hands because the author has gotten here before you and is finding this amusing.
Well, they're also writing. There are two levels that you're reading them on. With Flannery O'Connor, on the one hand, you're reading this hilarious story. On the other hand, there's a sense of dread and fear that permeates.
Right. Well, O'Connor is a great case because she was taken up with life and death, and indeed the afterlife, as a seriously Catholic writer, and it points toward a deep equivalency of the comic and the tragic. It in both cases, you're up against something really desperate about human existence.
You write about the Berglund family, in this book. They were the super guilty sort of liberals who needed to forgive everybody so their own good fortune could be forgiven, who lacked the courage of their privilege. Is liberalism doomed because of this psychological makeup, or are these people just a bit corrupted by the money that they're making despite their ideals?
I was trying to be even-handed in my criticism of both the right and the left in this book. I think it probably ultimately was maybe a little bit more to the taste of liberal readers than conservative readers, but I feel I'm very hard on the professional Democrats and on liberals in general.
It's kind of hard on it.
Yeah, it is. And I think there's an insufficiency to any political position with regard to the world, and I think I am a liberal myself, and I feel that there is this contradiction at the center, that you have to be in a privileged position in order to really entertain those liberal sympathies, and yet I think if you consider the alternative, which is foregoing sympathy, and taking a really harsh, neo-Darwinist free market view of the world, that's even worse.
Well, you satirize environmentalism's naivete through the career mistakes that Walter Berglund makes. Despite those mistakes, he cares deeply about the environment and is consistently referred to by most everyone in the novel as irrevocably good.
He's a nice guy. I was not conscious of trying to satirize. I was more interested, having gotten involved in conservation myself through my love of birds. One of the first things you learn if you are no longer looking at conservation from the outside is what a set of awful, gut-wrenching compromises doing good work entails. You have to kind of check your moral absolutes at the door.
Well, reviewers often comment on the fact that you don't take it easy on your characters, particularly the ones who are trying to be good. Is that something you're doing consciously? You don't want to make them too nice? Patty, constantly. We want to love Patty,
she keeps messing up. She keeps making mistakes. Part of that is... No, I don't deliberately revel in people's errors, and yet I am interested in drama. I am interested in situations of sort of peak emotional intensity, and people who are nice, good, and doing everything right. It's really hard to, you have to give them a terrible traffic accident or a terrible illness in order to get a story out of it.
So you've been touring for much of the last couple of years. Have you been able to get any writing in?
Well, I did do this big piece for The New Yorker. Fiction writing?
Writing.
I'm pining to get back to failing in my office. But at the moment, I've been doing, I'm actually, for the moment, a script writer. I'm working on this new, what I hope will be a show for HBO, 4-year series based on The Corrections.
Oh, based on The Corrections. But it'll follow a lot of characters areas?
A lot of new material, yeah. It has the potential to be a really, really remarkable project. And somewhat against my will, I've become a writer on it and kind of loving it, but also missing the solitary desk.
Well, there's that whole matter of creating characters and living with them for years and then suddenly abandoning them for a whole new set of characters in another book. Some writers just pick up where they left off. So... were those characters still there in the back of your head?
It had been long enough that that it was kind of fun to come back to them. And because there's such a demand for new material because we have so many hours to work with, since it's a real series, not a miniseries, there was an opportunity to fill in all the blanks. And it was kind of exciting to discover that I could imagine all these different moments in these characters' lives that I had not, that I just kind of, I'd actually deliberately glossed over because I wasn't sure I could even figure it out. But now I'm figuring it out, and that's enough of a challenge to keep me in the game.
Jonathan Franzen's Freedom was a number one national bestseller when it was released in hardcover. It's just been published in paperback by Picador. Thank you so much for coming back to our show.
A pleasure, Lenny.